Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the exchange, feel free to jump in. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, it's 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We're working hard in our society to stop people from bullying one another, especially when they're young. Bullying can turn into something far uglier in adults. Today's guest writes of the roots of bullying and hatred in his book, Our Road to Hatred: How We Raise Our Bullies. Robert Feuerstein goes way back in time and deep into our genetic makeup for his discussion of people mistreating other people now and in the past. Robert Feuerstein's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Robert, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you very much, Jeff, for having me.
You are not a social scientist, I understand. Tell us how you came to this. This is a bit outside your comfort zone, as we teased it at the head of the show.
Well, it really is. You know, the fact that I'm even on a radio station talking about this topic. I was a home builder for 40 years and married for 28 and a father of three sons, and I have an engineering background. And it occurred to me a few years ago when I was on a vacation, you know, in Rome, sitting in a sidewalk cafe, and we're watching people walk around of all different, you know, creeds and from different parts of the world, looking different than anybody else. And they're all getting along. They're all interested in the sights that they're seeing. There was no violence or anything. So it occurred to me, you know, what's going on here? It was just at the time when we had invaded Iraq and we were hearing about, you know, radical Muslims. So if everybody's getting along, where did we get these ideas of hatred? And so I started doing some research. I mean, I was going to solve the problem, the Israeli-Palestinian problem, and do some research on it and finally get to the bottom of it myself. And while I was doing it, you know, I discovered some things that just, you know, turned my head.
What were some of those things then?
Well, you know, in doing the research, I came across some science, which it's really not publicized too much. And it's what the discoveries of the Human Genome Project revealed. And this was only recently because we all grew up thinking that people were different than others. But the human genome science came out about 10 years ago, and it revealed that regardless of anybody's innate behaviors or appearance or gender, there's not enough genetic variation between anybody on the earth to classify anyone as a different species or race, for that matter. So immediately the bells went off in my head. I said, wait a second, we're looking at things totally the wrong way. Where did we all get all these ideas of supremacy, which lead to, you know, discrimination and hatred? And that's what I pursued a little further. Next thing I know, it was a couple of years later, and now I'm starting to write a book.
The term race itself, is that even found in science? I mean, you went deep enough into the Human Genome Project to get a sense of this.
There's no biological definition of race in science. You know, it was a social construct, and it's been known for a few years, and, you know, it's been a moral imperative that people argue for equality, but now it's become a scientific imperative that we are all fundamentally equal enough. And there's other science that goes along with it to support it. It's not just all based on the Human Genome Project, because many people can debate that, oh, well, we do have different genes here and there, and therefore they are sub-races or species of some sort. But there's other science that, if that's the case, then you'd have 7 billion people, you know, excuse me, 7 billion races, which it can't be, of course. And doing more research, we find out why people come up, you know, look differently and have different skin colors and different behaviors. We're just all human when it comes down to the, you know, the bottom line. We're human beings. We just come in different packages, shapes and sizes, but we're all people.
You're very clear in the title of the book and the subtitle as well, Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies, that all of mankind is complicit in this. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, because at least for the past 2,500 years, a good portion of the Earth's population has been following, you know, certain guidelines that have been handed down, which were handed down, you know, tribal guidelines 2,500 years ago. And we followed those. Dutifully, we followed those. And yet they were established 2,500 years ago to keep, they were cohesive tools to keep societies together and to keep people together with a common cause. And it worked. Unfortunately, the ideas that they had then, where they discriminated against people and set those tenets out for membership, now we've found out that they're divisive and that they're discriminating. Because if we're all the same according to science, how can we discriminate on people who just have different colored skin just because they grew up in a different part of the earth and were subjected to environmental conditions, which is what primarily determined their different appearances, the sun. So, and when it also comes to innate behaviors or gender, we're all equal. We're all part of the human race, and we're part of an even larger ecosystem on the earth.
The bullies you referred to in your subtitle, How We Raise Our Bullies, we're not talking just schoolyard bullies. It sounds like on a grander scale, and I don't mean grand in the sense of good, but grand in the sense of larger scale, like genocide and dictatorships and totalitarian governments and things like that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, bullying is not just limited to the schoolyard or on the internet. I mean, it could be military sexual assault. I mean, first of all, bullying is a power imbalance. It's used to abuse and coerce. And it's built on a foundation of supremacy and disrespect. So when you have people that are claiming that they're superior to someone, or you have a gang of people, that's a power imbalance. You can have military sexual assault. You could have sexual harassment. Dictators are bullies. You even have spousal abuse where, you know, one partner makes the other partner feel inferior or is abusive to them. That's all bullying. It's a power imbalance used to abuse and coerce. So it's not just on the schoolyard or on the internet. We find that today because that's what we talk about. But people don't realize that it's so pervasive in everything else.
We'll get into why that might be. Our guest is Robert Feuerstein. His book is Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies. And you can join us here in the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with Robert and take your phone calls and emails in just a few moments. Back here on the Jefferson Exchange with Robert and you in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Robert Feuerstein. He's the author of a book called Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies. Robert had an engineering and home building background and noticed the way that people responded to one another, or didn't, that they were just fine with a bunch of different races around, and decided to explore the roots of human hatred. And he went way, way back in time and far deep into the human genome to realize, among other things, there really aren't very big differences between us at all. The concept of races is bankrupt. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about Robert's concepts and what he discovered. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. I'm curious about one particular section of the book. Your son really came home while you were working on all this research and used a couple of slurs himself?
To be honest, no.
Oh.
I did it for effect, but, you know, it wouldn't be put past my talking like that years ago, all right? Because I was raised with that, and it was just, you know, de rigueur, like, of the day. Everybody spoke that way. We all believe we were raised up until recently thinking that there were different races and that, you know, people of darker skin were inferior genetically and that there were different races. We only had the civil rights laws that came in 1965 or four. So that was my vernacular. And my son did not come home like that, but I did it more for effect.
All right. But the fact is that it seems like a lot of us can remember back into our earlier days when we said things that just are not acceptable to say now.
Well, you know, there's muscle memory, and I struggle with that frequently. And I've tried my best to raise my children without those remarks. You know, when people speak in their own house disparagingly of others, that's how children learn. The parents are the role model, and they can learn respect in the home for other people, particularly in light of the new science. So, I mean, I have memories of how I was raised when I heard my own parents speak a certain way, and certainly my friends and their parents. I mean, it's just the way it was. We were all under the impression at that time, and that's what we were even taught. There were experts up until the latter part of the 20th century teaching that there were, in fact, different races. But debunked now, fortunately, because of the human genome findings. And quite frankly, when they were coming out with those findings just before, there was a lot of apprehension by the darker-skinned community because they were afraid that there was going to be confirmation that they were of an inferior or a subspecies. And quite the contrary was what came out. Believe it or not, there isn't, and they came out with the results, as I mentioned before, that there's not enough variation to classify anybody as a subspecies. And there's some other science that goes along with this too, which all ties in together. The other one is the Genographic Project, which was in conjunction with National Geographic Society, where they're able to trace what they call blood markers back through generations. And everybody has them. And what they can do is they can trace the movements of modern man for the past 100,000 years to Africa. And they trace how people moved across, migrated across the world, across land bridges when the ice, the ice ages were here, lower terrain in the ocean becomes exposed because the ice stays within the ice caps. So people were able to traverse the continents that way, and they migrated all over the world. And that's we've been doing this for 20,000 years that they finally came to the United States. It's a fascinating topic. It's a tremendous amount of research, and one thing led to another, and I just couldn't stop doing it. And it's like a puzzle that is of humanity. And where do you start with the piece? Where do you start? It's just one total picture of humanity and how everything is connected to one another.
But none of this should really surprise anybody, should it, Robert? I mean, we've been talking for a long time about the fact that, hey, we're all people. We come in different sizes, shapes, and colors, but other than that, we're all people.
I don't think the information is being disseminated out there the way it really should be. I don't hear newsflash on the radio that, there are no races. I don't hear newsflash that homosexuality has been determined by the American Psychiatric Board and all the other reputable psychiatric organizations that it's as normal behavior as heterosexuality. I don't hear those newsflashes. And that's why we still have a lot of this discrimination and hatred and bullying, which is a result of those things going on today. You still have religions that are teaching discriminatory tenets. You know, every Sunday people congregate. We see it on television all the time. It's a sensitive topic, but unfortunately it's the latest. I mean, people, we have smartphones and we have computers, and we update them regularly. Why not our minds? And the lack of respect taught in the home, it starts in the home with disparaging remarks. And if we can't update our minds, we're not going to get this bullying thing over with. It'll be around until people confront the roots and where it occurs and where it started.
There are some notable cases of hatred that you cite in the book. One of them is the case of James Byrd Jr. It's not an easy case to talk about, but remind us who he was and what happened to him.
Well, he's the one that really piqued my interest and got my attention, and that was more than 13 years ago. He was the darker-skinned gentleman who was dragged by a truck in Texas. He was chained to the back of a truck, and a couple of guys chained him and dragged him 3 miles, and it's a horrible thing to imagine that he was dragged and he was dismembered, head thrown off, torn off. And that was depraved indifference. It was lack of respect for, fellow humankind. So obviously everybody hasn't gotten the message. And I'm sure there are still plenty of people today who, have an issue with it because they were raised that way. But I think if it's not taught in the home because not everybody can reconcile with it, well, then it should be taught in the schools the same as evolution. And as a matter of fact, it's even easier to teach than evolution because it's not controversial, only because of the definition. But this science is not controversial because you can trace back via blood, and you can have the Human Genome Project, the Genographic Project. So that's firm stuff. So teach that in school from an early age to children so that when they go home and a dad or a mom says, speaks disparagingly of other people, the kids can they can have their own choice and say, Mom, Dad, did you hear the science? It's not like that. There's a difference, and maybe the parents will learn something, too, from the children.
Let us take a couple of calls here. Let's start with Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein, the author of Our Road to Hatred.
Howdy. Back in the 60s, and I think the National Geographic, there was just a one page blurb that sort of stuck in my mind ever since. And it said, we got 5,000 some odd years of recorded history that we've, you know, deciphered and so on. And out of all this pile of stuff that we've written down, we've only managed to find 32 years where there wasn't a war going on somewhere, which sort of makes me wonder, is aggressiveness sort of built into the hardwired into the minds and genetic codes of Homo sapiens?
That's a very interesting question. Let's see what Robert found out about that. Thanks for the call, Steve. Robert?
Sure. Well, we have another thing that's called human universals. And as human beings, we come with about 200 of what they call human universals. And it could be aggressiveness. It could be, you know, people tell jokes all over the world. They have rituals. It's things that humans do as a behavior. And just the way that we can cultivate hatred or cultivate our aggressiveness, we're also born with the capacity to love and solve problems and have mutual respect for people. So it's really what's accentuated. So what did the tribes and the groups of people to keep people together years ago, what did they really teach the rest of the people? You know, they said, oh, well, if you're gay, you're it's detestable behavior. So let's hate those people. They're not part of us. And the people on the other side of the hill, you know, they look different. So let them be our enemies also. And this is how you kept groups together, you know, and that's where, so that was cultivating hatred and aggressiveness. But it's just as easily, and there are many tribes that they find, you know, in South America still or in deep parts of wherever else is left on the earth that, you know, hasn't heard about Western societies, let's say. But they're peaceful societies. You know, yes, we have these aggressive tendencies and all these other human universals, but it's what we cultivate and accentuate in raising our children.
Robert Feuerstein's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies. He's not from a genetic background or a science background, but came from engineering and home building, got interested in the subject matter, delved into the Human Genome Project and human migration and a lot of science and history to put this book together. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about hatred and races and things that we get bogged down in as a human race. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email jx@jeffnet.org. But it seems like there's a certain level of higher level thinking that has to come into play here, Robert, that often doesn't. And I don't mean to be flip about this or turn it into a pun, but it really is black-white thinking, me good, you bad. And you have to rise above that level of simplicity, don't you?
Well, it seems to be that it's black, white, or good or bad, but it doesn't have to be if we learn the new paradigm of how to look at our fellow man. It's a whole paradigm shift. In other words, we've been raised, look, more than half the world has been raised for the past 2,500 years with the Abrahamic religions. That's Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. And they all came from the same derivative tenets. That was the Old Testament. And that's been around for 2,500 years. The United States alone is 75% Christian-based. So when you're growing up with these tenets, yeah, it is white and black because that's fundamentalism to a lot of people. You either believe this or you don't, and you're either a member of the group or you're not. So when we get this new information, though, it really causes us to, you know, update our thinking. Or it should update our thinking. But unfortunately, the reason why I say it was a sensitive topic is because people have been raised with this for many years, and they have to really question what they've been raised with. I had to do it. I was raised, you know, I was one of the chosen ones living in white suburbia. I was one of the supreme beings. But I had my bubble burst because I found out new information, and I was really bothered that billions of people have suffered over the years for this. I mean, in 1452, there was a papal edict that was handed down by the Pope, and it was called Dum Diversus. And it said if you couldn't be converted to Christianity, you could be killed or enslaved. That's pretty white or black, if you ask me. And during the Age of Discovery, they encountered totally new people all over the place, going down the west coast of Africa. Of course, they encountered Africans. They were darker-skinned people. And when they came to the United States, to America, they encountered red-skinned people, all right? Because the elite, they were like-kind people who, you know, genetically reproduced from a like-kind area, and like-kind genes produce like-kind-looking people. So, yeah, it was white or black when it came to can you be converted or not, and are you gay or are you not, and are you these tenants or are you not? So I can understand where some people come across that, gee, it's kind of simple. Are you or aren't you? And it shouldn't be now with the new science.
Well, let's take a couple of calls here. Here is N-Word in Ash Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein, the author of Our Road to Hatred.
Yes, good morning. You know, aside from what I wanted to say was that when you talked about the paradigm shift, I think it started about 230-some-odd years ago in a codified document. You know, it's got principles in it. Anyway, you know, the topic inspired in me images of Uncle Sam on the world stage. I think what's missing in human development, or in our so-called human development, is the being that makes humans beings. And to be equal as beings, commerce must be regulated effectively enough to affect frugality, because, like Montesquieu said, frugality of fortune and equality, knowing themselves different, cannot subsist separately.
So how should we be looking at this?
Well, you know, we're talking about this, our human development and all the hatred we have in our culture. You know, we grow up with these images, you know, killing people, you know, toy soldiers and stuff as we grow up, and now we're like afraid to say anything because we have all this animosity inside of us when we see people that are a little bit different, you know. And I think if we address the fact that we do have this image in the world that we are the bully, we are mean, and we intimidate other people on the world stage, and I think if we take if we consider the fact that we are beings like animals, you know, I think there's more intellectual, moral integrity in a bear in the woods than a guy with a gun hunting the bear.
All right, let's take that up with Robert. Thanks for the call, Edward. Do you delve much into the United States as bully on this in this book?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a power imbalance. We have a tremendous power, tremendous capabilities, and, you know, we're living kind of in the past when we're using that our power. Yes, there are other people who haven't gotten the message already, but there are ways that we can cooperate with nation to nation. In other words, it's not like we're living on the prairie anymore and you can establish your own rules and, you know, nobody will bother you. We now have neighbors. Our political boundaries and geographic boundaries are getting so small, populations are growing. You know, it's difficult to maintain them culturally, because we're cross-blending our cultures just by traveling and communications. So we've reached that point where, you know, when you can have, 19 people be bothered by the United States or the way they think we stand in the world, and they fly a plane into a building and kill 3,000 people, you know, you're not going to hermetically seal ourselves from the world. It won't happen. You can't do it. And I hate to say it, you know, some other things aren't even 99%, you know, protective. But I understand that the caller's point. I mean, there are lots of things that we need a new paradigm shift. It's like I think he was referring to capitalism. It's ruthless if it's not regulated. There has to be. It can't be a little house on the prairie anymore, and we can do whatever we want. We are living in a world community now. We have immigration. We have people. It's really just people who want to move from one part of the world to another. Why do we prevent that? Everybody's not a terrorist, but we have this mentality, and it's a throwback also to the, you know, the white supremacy, that they're going to get diluted, that the genes would be diluted. So that's why we have this fear of immigrants, but yet they're just people. And why not assimilate them in? Because they do buy, they do pay taxes, we're all immigrants. You know, unless you're a Native American Indian, we're all immigrants. So how did we figure it out up until now, and all of a sudden now we've got a problem?
Robert, let's talk about the section in the book about Julius Caesar, where you say he lit the fuse to a footprint of hate. How was that?
Well, you know, he expanded the empire. he went into Gaul, he went into Great Britain, what now is in Great Britain, of course. And he, you know, had posts there. And that, the way I, what happened was with Caesar, they expanded his empire, you know, to multiple countries, acres and acres and square miles of geography, you know, from the Mediterranean, north coast of Africa, all the way up to Great Britain. So the network was established. So when Constantine came along, you know, in around 325, and he said, okay, Christianity is good. And then at the end of that century, Theodosius came along and said, okay, now it's the true religion of Rome. Well, now you have the network established already, and I can get back to a little more how that then jumped across the ocean and why the world is predominantly of Christianity.
All right, subjugation involved here. The book is Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies. Robert Feuerstein, its author, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome back and talk more with Robert, and take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you again for listening. Our guest today, Robert Feuerstein, came from a home building and engineering background, got really interested in how we relate to one another as races in the world, and delved very deeply into both history and science and discovered there's really just one race, the human race. And the genetic information indicates that that is entirely true. And yet, still, we don't like each other very much upon a time. Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies is the book Robert Feuerstein wrote. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Back to the topic we were just talking about, specifically about Julius Caesar lighting the fuse of a footprint of hate. Because of the expansion of the Roman Empire, then you're saying when Christianity became the religion of the empire, that it allowed what event? I mean, we're heading toward the suppression of other religions by the Christians.
Well, sure. You had the in the Mideast, you had Islam was up and coming as a response to Christianity, and during the Age of Discovery, which was ventured out by the Europeans. They then embarked on spreading that religion with Dum Diversus of 1452 as the papal edict, that it was supposed to spread Christianity. So when they came to the Western Hemisphere, that's predominantly, if you look at a map of where the predominant religions are, that's predominantly Christian. And they spread the word. And so that, in essence, is why I say he lit the fuse. They had the network. And that's how we ended up with it.
I want to then talk about the more recent history of racism or hatred in Europe, or the recession of it, for that matter. I'm left with the impression, certainly the way you stack up the events in the book, of something of a game of whack-a-mole. You reduce one kind of hatred, and another one seems to pop up to take its place.
I'm not. You know what? I think there's a whole bunch of it out there. I mean, mm-hmm. when you have so many different tenets, I mean, you have the tenets of... A woman should be subservient and quiet. You have a tenet that homosexuality is detestable. You have, spare the rod, spoil the child. You have multiple tenets in there which dictate, behavior, and people follow these things. So the bottom line and the result today is that we end up with polarizing views. If you're not this, it was that black and white that you referred to earlier. If you're not this, you're that. And if you're not that, you're this, and you're an enemy, you're either with us or you're against us. Well, it's not that. It shouldn't be that mentality, because there are lots of different people in the world, lots of different cultures coming in different packages and, you know, and shapes and sizes and innate behaviors. But again, we're just human beings. But unfortunately, it's a throwback to the 2,500-year-old tribal instincts of us versus them. And it shouldn't be. We can all get along.
Well, it's not surprising you're getting a few phone calls here. Let's go to Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein. His book is Our Road to Hatred.
Well, good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Robert. Well, Steve, the first caller, he kind of stole my thunder because I was going to ask a question regarding what he referred to, but I have a sort of a question and an actual comment. The first comment I have is that I believe that humanity, to survive the Ice Age, had to become something like an omnivore with predatory tendencies. And if this engenders hatred, so be it. But it's one of the things that got us through the Ice Age, and that's why we survived, and that's why we're talking on the telephone right now. And, Robert, here's a question for you.
Okay.
Would it be all right if you wanted to kind of boil this down to, like, let's all grow a thicker skin and more of a sense of humor? Because I think empathy is the thing that we need to use to try to cure this situation we're doing. The more we understand that we're more alike than we are different, then we might be able to settle things in a way that everybody can understand. It's sort of like a watching people's faces for something like telepathy or something like that.
All right,
I'll just take the responses off the air there, Jeffrey.
Thanks for that, Jamie. Appreciate it. Robert?
Okay. I don't think that simply growing a thicker skin is the answer, particularly if you're poking somebody constantly. Should they grow thicker skin so they don't feel the poking? How about if we change the poking to mutual respect? Okay, then we don't have to grow thicker skins.
All right, let's go to Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein. His book is Our Road to Hatred.
Well, thanks for taking my call, and boy, thank you, Robert, for having the moxie to tackle this incredibly important subject, and I'm so glad to have someone who, like yourself, is coming from outside the usual halls of academia on this subject.
Thank you.
And making a contribution to this work of trying to understand why we as a species are capable of so much destructiveness and destructive behavior. And also thanks to Jeffrey for having you on.
Thank you.
You've got good instincts for authors to... Anyway, I've got so many things I could say, and there's no time to do them all. I was glad to discover that your website had a link to where I could email you.
Sure.
I really think you're on the right track, and I think, you know, I've been kind of mining this same vein for a long time in a lot of different ways that I won't go into, but perhaps I'll write you about that. I think it's kind of all hands on deck time for the human race.
Oh, absolutely.
And we need everybody thinking about these things, and I'm excited about your book. I will definitely be getting it.
Thank you.
I just like to throw out that I've been working in recent years in early childhood education after working with adults and juveniles in a lot of settings that involve violence and trying to curb the violence.
Uh-huh.
And I finally realized that actually, rather than trying to undo damage that's already been done, it's really important to work with really young kids so you can prevent the damage from being done, hopefully.
I call it inoculating the kids.
All right. Thanks for that, Sandy. Appreciate it. Any further thoughts, Robert?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're products of what we're taught, and it starts in the home. The parents are the role models. And again, if they teach disrespect about other people, then the children will learn it. It's really very simple. And I believe, though, that, you know, bullying is like a disease. You know, it has a root, and it's spread around by other people. So if we inoculate our children, if we love them for who they are and give them support and confidence, you know, that gives them, that to some degree gives them the tougher skin, you might say. And that's inoculating children so that we don't have to worry about who they're on the internet or whatever. It's about teaching them to make smart choices about who to hang around, what gangs to join, if it's a gang, or what groups to join, actually. And, you know, the inoculation is the best way of warding off disease. You can't monitor who our kids are going to be around all the time. It's about teaching them to make smart choices.
Here's another call from Richard in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein. His book is Our Road to Hatred.
Hi, Jeff and Robert.
Hi.
Robert, I just want to echo what some other people have said and thank you for all your work.
Thank you.
It's just great. And I got a couple of sound bites for you. I designed a T-shirt about 20 years ago called Learn. Let's End All Racism Now.
Put it on my internet, or I mean on my website, and get in touch with me, and we'll talk about it.
Okay, I will.
And you got to get the word out. Have to get the word out. That's the point.
Yeah, and the thing that goes with it is when I was kind of selling these shirts here and there, is that racism thrives on ignorance.
Absolutely.
And then the other little sound bite is someone mentioned empathy a little bit earlier, and yeah. I found a definition in my 50-60-year-old dictionary, Webster dictionary, for empathy, and it's imaginative projection of one's own consciousness into another being.
Yeah,
and I was thinking, wow.
Can you imagine dragging somebody behind the truck if you had empathy?
No.
I mean, that's why they did. They didn't have empathy.
They were devoid of it.
Good point.
All right. Thanks for that, Richard. Appreciate it. So I wanted to ask, though, I mean, the basic premise you're working with here is that people need to know the information out there, but aren't you attempting to address an emotional issue, an emotional immaturity issue, I suppose, or a lack of emotion issue, lack of empathy, with an intellectual approach? I mean, the fact is you can know this stuff and still say, yeah, I know it, but I don't care. I still don't like those guys.
You know, it's what's learned in the home. It's as simple as that. If you teach kids pick up on empathy. Now, look, they have an innate understanding of empathy, from what I understand, of a lot of the studies that they've done. But parents can undo it, you know, and it's what is accentuated in the raising of our children. What are the behaviors that we're accentuating? Love and hate, or love or hate, you know, or cooperation or uncooperation or bullying, you know, teach kids empathy. Teach them to respect other people. Would you like it done to yourself? How would you feel?
And in that vein, here's an email from Tim in Eureka. He asks, has your guest noticed a gender difference among parents who make disparaging remarks in front of their children at home?
You know what? I hate to say this, and guys, I'm really sorry, but I'm taking the party away, you know, the punch bowl. It's a man's thing that has created this because, you know, who was the last woman pope? Who was the last woman to write, you know, the Old Testament? The guys wrote this stuff, and it was their idea of, you know, from an aggressive point of view, let's have a group and let's keep us together. And but there's, look, women bully too. They can do it, but I think men have a lock on it. Women only got the right to vote less than 100 years ago. So I can't go around blaming women for this. And, you know, but they learn too. Women learn. But part of the problem is they've stayed subservient, and I'd like for women to start speaking up as much as we all have to deal with it. It's new to us. I'm not saying it in a disparaging way. It's different, and we need it. If we want our children, you know, not to have bomb packs strapped to the back of them and, you know, walk into a building and blow up people, if we don't want to have kids dragging people behind trucks, you know, it comes from all avenues, women, men, dads, fathers, all of them.
And on that note, let's bring in a woman's perspective. Here's Jeannie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Feuerstein.
Hello. Robert, you're a great speaker.
Thank you.
Concise. Oh, I just get it. I'm fortunate my parents sent me to, I think, a Bible summer camp. And I learned a song as a young kid, red and yellow, black and white, all are precious in this sight. We won't bring religion into this, but that stuck with me. Little did I know, or I'm not sure I still know, my parents were racially prejudiced. But I never knew it till we moved from California to the South. And among their family, they started talking just like them with bad words.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, they've been holding this in all this time? You know, anyone could spend the night. Navy housing, Filipino, black, brown. Too bad they don't have brown in that song. You're an excellent speaker, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeannie. That's an interesting point she brings up, though, the fact that there's a lot of encouraging other people with racism and hatred, where people, when they get around people who are like-minded, it's like, oh, now I feel like I can really speak my mind here, which is apparently what happened with Jeannie's parents.
Well, you know, for 20 years of a child's life, they're raised in a let's say, a cocoon of the parents, you know, and they hear everything about the parents, and they're the primary teachers. They go to synagogue, they go to Sunday school, they go wherever they're going to learn religiously, dutifully, and obeying the parents. But the parents learn from their parents. So where it was always, you know, a moral imperative to learn certain things for the past 2,000 years, now you know, we have to question. I questioned what my father taught me. And, you know, in looking back, sure, my father was practiced bigotry too. All right? Many did. And I give them a pass only because that's what was being taught at the time. But we're not, we shouldn't be teaching that now. So bullying and racism and bigotry will continue until we unlearn that behavior. And it just takes a little, it's so embarrassingly simple. Just teach it to the children, and in a generation or two, it'll be gone, or not 100%, but it'll make great strides in moving the goalpost to the goal from where we want to be.
I'm curious about one section of your book. There's a very long section on slavery in there, and I know that having talked about slavery in an Oregon context not terribly long ago, there wasn't much of it in Oregon, but there was some.
Mm-hmm.
But there was intertribal slavery with Native Americans. So how do you explain slavery within and not across ethnic groups?
Well, slavery's been around for, you know, thousands of years, but it was usually the spoils of war. So, you know, and they were used as equipment and tools. So slavery was acceptable. But the papal edict of Dum Diversus took it to another level, took it to another degree. And because if you just simply, and picture this, you're going down the coast of Africa, you encounter people who look different than you, and you read them, you know, a declaration that are taking you unless you convert to a different religion. Now, do you think they even understood the language? So, of course, they thought that they were inferior, and they just bullied them and did worse.
All right, that is all the time we have to talk to Robert Feuerstein today. His book is Our Road to Hatred, How We Raise Our Bullies. Robert, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. On tomorrow's Jefferson Exchange, we'll talk about public employees unions in Oregon and how they're getting ballot measures up to counter some of the measures taken by the legislature lately. In 8:30 segment, we'll talk about Trinity Water Releases and the success they had this year with bringing fish back successfully up from the ocean. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll visit once again with Dave Foreman, one of the founders of Earth First and the father of the rewilding movement in America. We'll talk deeply about what the rewilding movement is all about. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duran. Our student assistant manning the controls today, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.